Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to Raptors Over Everything, a podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm your host, William Liu. Joining me live in, the attic of our Milwaukee Airbnb, which is actually quite nice. It's a quite nice venue here. But Blake Murphy from The Athletic.
Hey, man. The Cuban food hitting you, eh? That's low energy intro.
I'm kind of sleepy. I'm not going to lie, even though we both had a...
Café con leche.
Café con leche. Yeah, shout out. But, I mean, I think we might be a little bit low energy just because, you know, Raptors losing game one.
I thought it was going to be more fired up. Just so people know, we came in here and sat down, and Will laid out two mics on the table and told me to choose mine like it was the first battle rap in 8 Mile.
I mean, this essentially would be where most battle rap would take place nowadays.
In the attic of a probably suburb. Fairly white suburb.
Yeah, 100%. No, I mean, I don't know, man. I think yesterday, actually, after the game, I was a little bit more encouraged just from watching it live. And then I saw the tape back this morning, and somehow I feel a little bit less encouraged because I think a lot of what that game came down to was the Raptors, I think they took the Bucks by surprise with their intensity early on. I don't think the Bucks came out really strong. And then... the Raptors basically, I thought it was just the fourth quarter, but it was most of the third quarter as well. Like, they were so stagnant, and I think they kind of just, like, ran out of steam. And I don't know how much you can take out of a game like that, but what were your impressions of game one?
I actually kind of felt the opposite watching it back, at least as far as the offensive side of the ball for them. You know, watching it back defensively, I agree, they started to slide earlier than maybe people were talking about last night. The Bucks shooting only 25% on a high number of threes, including, I think, 24 of their 44 attempts or 45 attempts were wide open. So, you know, some of that is selectivity in who you're giving those shots to. They're probably not going to shoot that poorly every game. So defensively, I was like, okay, like, Milwaukee's definitely going to play better. Offensively, though, you know, it's easy to say they miss shots or whatever, but like they were doing a pretty good job of, even with Milwaukee packing the paint as they did, getting in there and then kicking it out. Kawhi's a little slow on the kickouts. Pascal doesn't read them quite as fast yet, but for the most part, open shots were there and they were creating them. So, you know, obviously it's been a story all playoffs that those shots aren't dropping, but at least from a process perspective, I was more encouraged by the half-court offense than I thought I would be watching it back.
What did you think of the Raptors' defense? Because I think, you know, half-court-wise, the results are impeccable. I think they allowed, 0.69 points per half-court possession. Nice. But it was sort of the other stuff that kind of killed them. Like, the fact that they gave up, I think, 25 fast-break points or 24 second-chance points. Like, you got to close possessions. And to be honest, I think the Raptors got to be a little bit more disciplined in terms of how they get back. Because the Bucks are a very dangerous transition team. And I thought Bledsoe got away from them at the start of the third quarter. And then Giannis, especially in that third quarter, I mean, him just getting to the basket, shooting 10 free throws in the quarter. It was just a sign of the Raptors. Again, I think they kind of just... in terms of energy, they kind of just wore down.
Yeah, and I mean, part of it is, too, if you're making those shots, it's easier to get back and get set or whatever.
Right.
So those things will flow together. But in terms of the half court, the offensive rebounds is the thing that stuck out to me most because it's something that Aaron Gordon killed them with and it's something that Ben Simmons killed them with.
Yeah.
So this is a problem that they have been dealing with. Now, part of why it comes is that when Giannis or Chris Middleton were getting the ball, the Raptors were showing a double. And sometimes, if that was on the low block, then it was kind of one of their base goes where you help off the corner on the baseline and then someone zones up the weak side. And that's fine, but then someone has to, you know, either the center, if it's Marc Gasol coming over, he has to be aware of his man crashing, or the guy who's zoning up the weak side has to be the first guy cracking back to box out. And those weren't there. And then when it's just a hard double, like one sticks out to me where Middleton had it on the left side and Gasol came over and it was a full double, and they end up with an offensive rebound off of it. There were a couple times, too, they showed Giannis three bodies in the paint, and then Mirotić or Ilyasova is right there. And it's tough because you have to show those bodies to Giannis, but it's a matter of focus and discipline, right? Like, you can't stop defending at 24 seconds, even if you think you've got a shot clock violation, as Chris Middleton heaves a, like, volleyball shot at the rim.
Yeah, I mean, I think this also speaks to, like, sort of just the push and pull with the Raptors all year, where it's like they obviously want to get on the break. They're so good offensively when they're in break. And I think what fueled their success in the first half, I mean, A, like, guys making shots was really great. But, like, the Raptors are consistently getting stops, going the other way, and getting early offense and efficient looks off those possessions. And look, I think, you know, part of this does speak to the Raptors, like, push and pull all year in terms of just how much they want to value their own transition offense versus getting back and defensively rebounding. Obviously, first half, I thought they got a lot of great looks just pushing on the break and stuff. Second half, you didn't really see that. Again, I think that might speak to a difference in energy as well. But I think, for me, one of the things that stuck out was just the idea that, like, the Bucks have a lot of bodies they can throw at you. And yesterday they had a big advantage in rest. But I think the fact that they can bring a guy like Ilyasova off the bench and he'll just actively go to the glass. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you compare Ilyasova's energy versus, like, Serge Ibaka's energy, it was just completely different. And I think, you know, maybe part of that is, okay, if the Raptors, you know, get into, I don't know, just get into the series a little bit better, you know, rediscover some of their hustle roots, some of their energy. Like, for example, I think Ibaka can play a lot better from that end, but it just feels like the Bucks have more bodies to throw at you. And at some point you're just like, what can you really do? Like, on one end you have Marc Gasol playing 40 minutes, on the other end you have Brook playing 35, and, you know, he doesn't have to have the same burden as Mark would. So I don't know. For me, like, that's just from watching the tape, it just felt like the Raptors got tired and the Raptors have less bodies, and those are kind of things that you can't really fully change.
No, and it shows in the half-court offense, and I think it was especially obvious in the second half. And yeah, they missed a lot of shots, and part of it is, you know, they're running possessions through Kawhi, who tends to take his time. But for the game, they averaged 1.4 seconds longer per offensive possession than Milwaukee. That seems small, but in a 24-second shot clock, you know, that's the difference between 8 on the clock and 6 on the clock sometimes. And those little differences over the course of an entire game, I think, speak to, you know, if Toronto couldn't get something in transition, it took them a long time to get shots in the half court. And again, part of that is Milwaukee's defensive strategy. They are going to dare you to drive and then force you to kick it out. It's just what they do. But part of it also is, you know, the Raptors have to recognize those chances to pass quicker. And then, yeah, to the fatigue point, they have to play with a little more pace even in the half court. You know, whether that's maybe some more off-ball movement with a guy like Danny Green or a guy like Fred VanVleet, who, when he's on the floor, you got to stop running the VanVleet, Serge Ibaka pick and roll as the main source of offense.
Yeah, it's tough.
VanVleet is better off the ball in terms of spacing the floor. Anyway, I'm sure we'll get into some of the rotation stuff, but there needs to be a little bit more purpose in the half court, especially outside of that first quarter. And yeah, I don't know to what degree fatigue plays a factor in that, but, like, I don't think you need Marc Gasol to be playing 40 minutes a game, and I don't think it does him or you any favors, really, to play him that much.
Yeah, I mean, there's diminishing returns eventually. Like, I thought Gasol's stint in the fourth quarter was bad.
Yeah.
Right? And I think he knew what to do, clearly. Like, the game plan for him defensively was pretty solid in the first half. And even in the third quarter, it was all right. But, like, you know, he looked tired. And I think Nurse, he wants the starters a little bit too early, which is something that, you know, has never been said so far in the playoffs. Sorry? He wants the starters too early, I think. Like,
in the fourth.
Yeah, 9:23, he puts back all five starting guys. And it's like,
after they played a 10-minute stretch in the first quarter, too.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
31 minutes as a five-sub last night.
Which, I mean, I get it. Like, I really get it.
That is the highest any team has played one unit in the playoffs in a game.
Yeah.
Like, eliminating overtime games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, like, I just don't think it's super conducive. And I think for the Raptors, like, you know, one other thing that really works against them here is that, like, they're older, right? Like Danny, whether he's banged up a little bit, I think he's definitely a little bit banged up.
I mean, his knees were heavily wrapped today, and guys get treatment on off days all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But even once the wraps were off, like, Danny's left knee looked a little swollen. He had that ankle thing late in the year.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell with him because he walks kind of...
He's ginger anyway,
yeah.
As it is.
However, it certainly looks like he's maybe... Look, I'm 33. I played an hour of basketball this morning, and my knees are pretty creaky right now. I am not an elite performance athlete.
I don't know, man.
But
I wouldn't know about
you
that.
You know, Marc Gasol's 34, Kyle Lowry's 33, Danny Green's 31,
yeah.
Serge Ibaka's 29 or 30. I can't remember how old he actually is.
Who?
Serge, 29?
29.
Yeah. So, like, those guys aren't old, but, like, you've played, that is your 13th game in the playoffs so far.
Yeah.
And this series has none of the extra days off. So you're going to have to manage that a little better. And obviously you need something from the bench to manage that better. But these 9 and 10 minute stretches for those guys, especially a guy like Gasol, it just seems too taxing on them.
Yeah. And like when he's missing box outs and then all his jumpers are short, like, I mean, I think it's pretty clear what was going on with him in terms of just fatigue. And it did feel like all game that the Raptors had that early lead and they just had to like really work to just maintain and protect. And if it always felt like the Bucks were going to kind of come on strong. I think Kyle obviously having a great second half and a great game overall, but especially in the second half.
Man.
He almost single-handedly stole that game for the Raptors.
Yeah, like that game could have unfolded differently where he didn't hit as many shots and like say the score is the same and someone else just hit some of Lowry's shots, that still would have been like a peak Lowry game because he drew the charge, he's clapping in a ref's face, he's speeding up, trying to inbound in transition,
yep.
He's doing relocation threes,
yep.
He's gnashing the pick and roll, like he did all the yep. little Lowry stuff all game. It was a very fun Lowry game.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Plus 30 points. It was the first time all year he's done that other than trying to get revenge on Dwayne.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And they lost that game, too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's only the fifth time in the last 3 years he's dropped 30, which feels, including playoff games.
Right, right.
Which feels crazy because right before that run, he was, like, giving Miami 30 on average over an entire playoff series.
Yeah. I mean, it is just kind of it is what it is with his age. Like, you know, he's obviously not going to consistently do that.
It's just cool to see.
If we're going to talk on the positive, obviously Kyle is more positive there. Do you feel like this is something that Assad was in the mentions about afterwards, and he was talking to me about. He looks, from his perspective, he thinks that Kyle looks a little bit lighter on his feet, looks a little bit healthier, and I think the release of the shot looked a lot better. I don't know if that's what you saw. I didn't quite spot it on the tape, but I mean, the results, I mean, 7-9 from three, it's phenomenal, especially considering he shot 1 of 20 against the Bucks in the regular season from deep.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's anything that pronounced as like, oh, he's feeling better, he's healthier now, especially since he's got the thumb thing going on. I know that doesn't affect your shot, but it affects your game overall. I would buy that explanation had he been like red hot from three all playoffs, but he's just been kind of fine, right?
I don't have
the numbers in front of me.
Inconsistent, I would say. Yeah.
So I don't know if it's anything like that or he just, you know, he had the release point down. He had the confidence going. It's hard to explain these.
He got gassed up because Bledsoe called him a Hall of Famer.
He sure did.
Which is a tricky conversation to have.
Bledsoe and Lowry are like a couple inches away from that Spider-Man meme. Like Bledsoe was out there having a full Lowry game too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I love Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah. I don't think he's as a heads up player as Kyle. But,
probably not.
But
he might be like better defensively locked in.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Might be.
Oh yeah.
He's better defensively locked in.
And the way he was able to attack like the one man fast break and get to the rim and just put someone under the basket, like, really reminded me of old Kyle, like 2014 Kyle, like the, you know, the what was it, the bulldog on Bay Street.
Yeah.
Didn't really like that nickname too much.
Is it bothering you at all that the Bucks are like pretty likable? Like, I find this is a hard team to slander.
Yeah.
Like, Giannis is so charming as he rips your soul apart. Like,
I mean, he also slandered the Celtics, which automatically in my books gets me a free pass.
He's a hero in Toronto now. Oh, man. But, like, I guess Chris Middleton's kind of mid or whatever. But, like, I find Brooke Lopez very entertaining.
Yeah, he is.
I like Malcolm Brogdon a lot.
Yep.
Pat Connaughton belongs on the Portland Trail Blazers bench. But
I mean, I can't believe they let him go.
Yeah. It's I wrote a thing, maybe not one of my favorite things, but one of the like most out there things I wrote was in 2016 when he was, I think, a rookie, maybe a sophomore at that point on Portland.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote about him also being a Major League Baseball prospect.
Yeah.
Like, he was in the Orioles system and like pitched minor league ball and like has a 97 mile an hour fastball.
97? I thought it was 95. Wow.
No, he
97.
Touched 97 according to the like scouting reports I dug up and stuff. So Milwaukee has all these likable guys, man.
There's also a video out there of Connaughton throwing an 80-yard pass. Like, he's throwing a football 80 yards.
Yeah, some guys are just athletes, man. It's like Terrence Ross. Like, Terrence Ross used to do that kind of stuff in practice all the time.
Yeah.
And it would just be, like, so easy. And I remember, I forget whether it was Lewenberg or Wallstedt or whatever, but he was tossing football, like, the full length of the gym one day, and someone asked him if he ever played, and he was like, nah. Just like, yeah, I just can pick up a football casually and, like, throw a 50-yard spiral. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, some guys got it like that.
Terrence wouldn't be a good football player, though.
I don't know, man. He might make a good cornerback. It's hard to say because, like,
the physicality is a little different.
Most
basketball
players are just, like, so tall for football.
That's true. That's true. Speaking of which, I put this on the timeline finally, but I'm in the firm camp that Kyle Lowry will be good at every sport.
Yeah. I quote retweeted it and, like, broke down what he would be. Like, baseball, he's definitely, like, a high OBP, working the strike zone, leaning in to get some hit by a pitch.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those guys. Like, he's a Craig Biggio type.
Who was that guy that was that had that weird batting stance and he played on the Red Sox?
Euclid?
Yeah, he'd be Euclid.
Yeah. Euclid is a good comp, too. Yeah, he used to take him off the elbow all the time and draw a ton of walks.
Well, I mean, I don't even know what he was doing. He was, like, spelling, like, an S with his body every time he swung the bat. No, but, I mean, like, even other sports, like volleyball, I think he'd be, like, a great, like, setter, for example. He's obviously not going to be one of those guys that, like, spikes it, but a guy who, like, just, like, digs it out and, like, sets people up, that's 100% Kyle. Like,
yeah. Penalty kill specialist in the NHL, blocking shots and stuff, obviously.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. That behind, he'd be...
buddy.
Leading the league in block shots.
Yeah, everyone else in the league lays down to block it with their shin pads, and Kyle just drops his knees and throws his butt at it.
I mean, in soccer, I think he'd be a great defensive mid. And I mean, like, seriously, I think Kyle, just like the smarts and everything, it'd be great. But
and as I tweeted, he would be a great tag team wrestler. Just like cut off the ring, ring generalship, good technical.
Yep. Yep.
He's smarter than most everyone.
Works the referee.
That's going to translate, yeah. being smarter than everyone is going to translate across sports.
Yeah. But anyway, back to game one. I think
you don't want to go more sports? You don't want to talk about like lacrosse or...
I don't think I know that many other sports. I think the one thing that really reminded me of that, I tweeted that after Kyle saved the ball going out of bounds, and like I play frisbee a lot, and like that's like... the greatest play you can make in frisbee is diving out of bounds to save a disc while it's midair, like jumping from inbounds, landing out of bounds, and throwing the disc back in. And that's basically what Kyle did with that basketball. So I'm like, he'd be pretty good at it.
You play a lot of frisbee?
It's been years, man. It's been years. You know, frisbee is all Asian people, and
really, that's surprising.
There's a lot of Asians in frisbee. Trust me.
Our boy Lewis Satzman loves him some frisbee too.
I might call him up to my team this year, although I've been so busy. I feel like our tuck team is not gonna be around this year, but anyway, look, game one, we're kind of focusing on the rest of it, but I think the main thing for both teams is, can you stop the other team's superstar? And I think from that perspective, I think, you know, both the Bucks and the Raptors should be pretty happy. I think Kawhi shooting 10 of 26 is great. And I think even Giannis, the fact that it's not even that he shot 7 of 16, which is below 50%, but the fact that he only took 16 shots is a reflection of how well the Raptors were able to wall off the paint. And to be honest, the Bucks were kind of doing the same thing. They were just really packing the paint, walling it off against Kawhi. I think Brook Lopez stepping up a little bit higher and sort of challenging a couple of his jump shots was also kind of surprising and pretty effective. But, I mean, in terms of that game plan, defensively, I think there's a lot of positives to be taken away. If you can... you hold Giannis to 24 points every game, you're in a good spot.
Yeah, and more like as much as holding Giannis to that, getting by with Siakam as his primary defender. And obviously you showed help and you doubled in the post and things like that. Yeah. Kawhi only spent 5 possessions on him. Five?
Something like that, I don't know.
5 or 9. It was single digits. It was 9, and Giannis spent 5 on Kawhi. Anyway, a lot of that was like off-ball stuff.
Yeah.
But if you can continue to not tax Kawhi Leonard defensively, or not as much, because Chris Middleton's still a tough check, and they were really more. He was the only guy on that team they were trying to run off the 3-point line.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't really see Kawhi doing like too much, like flying around, rotating.
Necessarily. I just mean in general, Middleton is a guy they're very clearly aware of.
That's true. That's the 3-point
line. Whereas like Bledsoe, Lopez, those guys they're giving shots to.
Yeah, they're late contesting.
Basically, everyone, even they gave shots to Brogdon, and they might need to adjust that. They might need to run Brogdon off the line a little bit, too.
Yeah. He's really good at going to the rim, too, though.
Yeah, Brogdon's but he's also, like, their best three-point shooter.
Percentage-wise?
Yeah, he's, like, over 40% for the year.
That's true.
He's great.
He is great.
But yeah, I mean, if you can protect some of Kawhi's workload that way, hopefully you hope it pays off on the other end of the floor. I had a conversation before the game. I won't say with who. I feel like a name drop.
Wow. Aggregate it. Let's go.
Zach Lowe of ESPN.
Oh, wow.
Because he had kind of written something similar to what Eric Name and I were talking about at The Athletic, in that, you know, Kawhi's not going to guard Giannis. Giannis isn't going to guard Kawhi. Whoever blinks first in that, you know, that might be a signal that that team's in trouble, right? Like, if you have to go away from your base coverage and tax your star that way. So I think it's something interesting to watch. I think it's interesting that neither team really went to it in game one, even though that game was so close.
Yeah, which I think both teams are kind of. I don't think there is any major adjustments defensively coming against at least the two main guys, right? I think the Raptors.
I don't think so. I think both teams are probably happy with
exactly
what they held the other guy to.
Right, and at that point, it's sort of just about how many guys outside of that make shots. And I think the Bucks yesterday, obviously, them shooting 25% is pretty low by their standards. But also the fact that they got 44 attempts. Are you a little bit worried about the number of attempts?
Yeah, a little bit, especially, as I mentioned earlier, 24 of those were classified as wide open by NBA.com.
And they that data is weird.
I know. Yeah. I had an issue with it because against the Sixers, the Raptors kept being like, oh, they got 17 or 18 wide open threes. It's like, okay, it's wide open because... So the way that I understand the tracking data, it bases a defender's distance based on, like, center of mass.
Which is dumb.
So if you have long arms and you're coming out fast, you know, Ben Simmons racing at you with his arm out, his body might be 6 feet away when that shot goes up, but you are not shooting that as if Ben Simmons is 6 feet away.
No.
So there's obviously some noise with stuff like that. But I do think it's a rough gauge of, like, did you decide to give this three up and then close out at it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think more than half of Milwaukee's threes coming that way was by design. I think they're okay with Brook Lopez shooting 11, given how he's shot in the playoffs.
Brook Lopez is definitely okay shooting 11.
Brook Lopez loves shooting 11. Oh, man. Also, that spin move that he had.
Dude, what the hell? He was spinning away from the basket, and he flipped the ball up.
Yeah, he changed hands at the last possible second, too. It was amazing.
He's so graceful.
It was ballet. Sorry, this is not analysis, but him and Giannis doing the podium after the game was hilarious. Great. First of all, Brooke keeps answering all the questions for him and, like, making a big production of it. Like, don't worry, Giannis, I'll answer the question.
Yeah, and these are not tough questions whatsoever. No. It's not Jimmy Butler protecting Joel Embiid.
And then also, like, I've heard Brooke Lopez talk for, like, a decade now, but it still surprises me what his voice is like compared to what he looks like.
For such a giant man, it's...
He just sounds like a California bro.
Well, you know, I just got to take the open shots that are there, and Giannis is... Like, that's really him. And he loves comic books and stuff.
Yeah.
It sucks that we got burned by him, you know? Like you mentioned, yeah, you're right. Now that you're mentioning it, it is a bit annoying that you can't even hate these guys at all. Like, there's nobody on the Bucks that is, like, eminently hateable. It's like Ersan
Flop. George Hill maybe would be the closest one.
There's nothing hateable. But I think it's, like, it's just Ersan Flop.
George Hill's just annoying because the Raptors run into him so many times.
Yeah. Well, him being just absolutely scoreless yesterday was strange. I didn't notice him at all.
No,
I thought Fred actually played better than him, which is saying a lot, but...
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, to the point of the guys getting other shots and stuff like that. I think, you know, like, there's – I think, again, like, if the Raptors had to sort of pick their poison a little bit, and I think their preference is to take away Giannis, force him into a couple of turnovers. And I think there is a way where Giannis is such a hard-charging player that even though he has a court awareness, there is a way to force turnovers out of that. And I think there's – not only is that a stop, but that gives the Raptors an opportunity to get an easy basket going the other way if it's a live ball. And so – I think, you know, the base coverage is there, but I think defensively, like, they can do a little bit better. Part of it, I think, is just, like, energy-wise. Like, I think they were just, you know, their rotations in the first quarter were so crisp. Everything was great. And then you
Pascal's
compare that.
Pascal's guarding, like, three guys on sub-possession.
Yeah, and then you compare that to the fourth quarter, and, like, you know, everyone's late on every contest, you know what I mean? So that stuff you got to change, but...
Danny said something interesting about that at practice today.
Okay.
He said, I mean, it was more relating to his offense, but he was saying how he feels more in an offensive rhythm because they don't run a lot of plays for him and his touches are kind of sporadic. Mm-hmm. He feels more in an offensive rhythm when he's guarding someone who's a little more active on the defensive end. And he spent most of his time when the starters were out there on Mirotić.
Right.
And I think part of that was because, you know, they think Danny can close out well.
He did pretty well. He bothered him on the dribble and stuff. He did do well.
I don't think that was a problem, but it's interesting because he's involved in a lot fewer actions then.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, obviously you don't change your schemes defensively to get Danny going offensively. That's a little galaxy brain for this.
And Kyle was doing a great job with Bledsoe.
Exactly.
He shot like 3 of 12.
But you could, you know, conceivably, for at least little stretches, put Green on Bledsoe if you think Green being more involved in the ball is going to help. Because if Lowry's on Mirotić, Lowry can kind of help, and, you know, he's not going to be able to contest well because of the size difference. But, like, Mirotić is going to take him into the post. If you do that, that's a win for the Raptors. It's something that the Raptors have done a fair amount of this year. They've plugged Lowry on shooting power forwards.
Yeah.
Like they did it against Philly a bunch when they had Muscala or
Tobias.
Yeah. It's they'll do it a bunch. And I wonder, you know, again, you don't put Green on Bledsoe to try to get Green's offense going. But I do wonder if those two matchups are, you know, because the other three matchups are set.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They're not moving
in. But maybe those are a little more fluid. And, like, as good a job as Lowry did on Bledsoe, the Raptors were trying to pre-switch in any of those Giannis-Bledsoe pick and rolls.
Yeah.
So they clearly don't want Lowry switch onto Giannis for obvious reasons. Even Lowry in the post isn't going to do too well with that matchup. So I wonder if maybe you see a little bit more Green on Bledsoe in game two.
I do want to see it, though, at least once or twice.
Yeah.
Just for Twitter to freak out, you know?
Yeah.
One thing I also noticed was that the fact that the Raptors, they took 42 threes themselves, which is, the Raptors are a pretty, you know, high three-point shooting team, but 40 is a very high number for the Raptors. I mean, were you happy with the looks? Do you feel like the Raptors should mix it up a little bit? I mean, what is it? Because it feels like a little bit that, like, the Bucks are almost sucking the Raptors into playing their game.
But that's what the Bucks' entire strategy is built on. Like, no team allowed fewer attempts at the rim this year, and no team allowed a lower percentage on those attempts at the rim this year. Like, it's just, you know, we talked about this a lot in the Magic series with the length that they have and the way they collapse the paint. The Bucks are like a supercharged version of that because Giannis is helping off the ball. You know, Giannis can help off of the weak corner to the strong side of the post and like, it's still not a huge issue because that guy is then two passes or an incredible skip pass away.
Yep.
And his closeout and recovery speed is so strong. Like, Giannis just makes the idea of, oh, well, just drive and play your own game. He makes it pretty tough. And even Lopez is a pretty good rim protector.
Amazing yesterday defensively.
Yeah. He had one possession where, like, he's like stunting at guys and then recovering onto a 3-point shooter. I think they protect the rim too well. Obviously, you would like to get as many points in the paint as you can, and you want to try to break them down to get those threes off of kickouts from the paint. Like Nick Nurse talks all the time about how, you know, their numbers when they get 1 foot in the paint. So even like getting that far and then kicking it out, you know, I think they want to do that more. But this is what Milwaukee's done to everyone all year. And you saw last night in the first half what the downside is for Milwaukee is if a team gets hot or a team shoots even decently, you know, that's going to be tough, and they shoot up a lot of threes too. But if you lose the 3-point battle, you know you're going to be in a close game like this one. So you know, obviously the Raptors would prefer slightly different terms of engagement, but I don't think taking more bad twos is preferable to, you know, mediocre threes.
Yeah, look, I hear you on that for sure, but I just think that ultimately the Raptors aren't going to win a lot of games if they shoot. If they shot 11 of 25 from the restricted area, which is both low in terms of percentage and also number of attempts. Usually the Raptors are much better than that.
Kawhi and Pascal last night both had 5 shots blocked for the first time in their careers.
Like each?
Yes.
Yikes.
I can't remember. Someone tweeted that stat on Twitter, and I feel bad that I can't remember who it was.
Right.
Maybe it was Jackson Frank. I'm not sure.
Right.
Apologies to whoever that was. There's no chance they're listening to this, probably. No offense.
Wow.
I just don't think someone not on Raptors Twitter is going to be listening to.
You're right. Yeah.
But yeah, they both had their shots blocked 5 times.
Yeah.
Like, Pat Connaughton. Was it Pat Connaughton who blocked the Kawhi 3 from behind?
Kawhi didn't know that was coming.
I know, but it's still funny.
Yeah. Pat also has like a 40-inch vertical.
Yeah.
The guy's a super athlete,
I think,
man.
At one point he like had the combine record for vertical.
Right. Until...
This is just a Pat Connaughton podcast.
Didn't DiVincenzo also have that too?
Maybe.
Yeah. Anyway.
Sneaky.
Oh, these guys are very sneaky. I mean, he snuck up on Kawhi. There's no other way to describe that other than he snuck up on Kawhi. But I mean, like, I do think that though there is a way for the Raptors to get a couple more efficient offense in terms of their main guys, because like realistically Pascal's best asset is attacking the rim and Kawhi's best asset is attacking the rim and also that mid-range game. And I think, you know, if
the mid-range game will be there for Kawhi more than it was, I think,
you know, but I think so too. But I also, like, after looking at the film and stuff, like, the Bucks were doing a pretty good job of like keeping their bigs a little bit higher than they usually would, like against everyone else, against Kyle, for example. Kyle stepped into a lot of open jumpers, right, and he hit them. which is, I think the Bucks are kind of like, we're willing to live with this. And, you know, it almost killed them in the end, but still, they you know, they got away with it. And that's with Kyle scoring 30. Like, with Kawhi, like, I think Brooke was up pretty high, and that's how he got a couple of those blocks. And you saw Kawhi do some very uncharacteristic things in terms of, like, the pump fake and the moving around. And he's basically doing that DeMar stuff of, like, I can't even find an angle.
An shoot. Up and under, and then I'm going to pass through arms.
Yeah, exactly, right? And that's a jump pass, too. Like, these are kind of situations where I thought he was getting stuck. And I think the same thing for Pascal. Like, you know, to be honest, if he doesn't have that, like, buzzer beating three at the end of the third quarter, or like those two little, like, mid-range shot he hit, or like the wing three that he's not usually a specialty, like, he had a really, really awful game.
Even with those, his true shooting percentage was under 40%.
Yeah, I mean, he shot, what, 6 of 20, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so I think for Pascal, like, really the only time I thought he was really successful when he was on the baseline and he could attack. And I think in that situation, I think the geometry of the Bucks defense is a little bit different, because if they do bring a help defender, then all of a sudden you do have, you know, they're kind of just like overloading on one side, and you can maybe see Pascal using his passing game to, like, dish it down low to, like, a Serge or Mark. And you know, and even when he got in single coverage, like, he had that little Euro step around Brooke, and then he had that dunk over Brooke. Like, you know, he has an opportunity on that baseline to do more damage. And I think so. I do think that ultimately, like, yes, you're right. Like, the Raptors got to take their threes. The Bucks are very good at taking away the rim. But I don't think you're going to get very far in this series if you can't attack the rim effectively with your two best guys.
Here's a question I have for you about Pascal. So he's going to be guarded by Antetokounmpo. We just saw him guarded by Joel Embiid for like 5.5 games, and how that length affected him. One thing that I think a handful of us suggested against Embiid was, you know, run some Siakam DHO, mm-hmm, dribble handoffs,
yep,
to get Embiid's feet moving at least, right? And then, yep, maybe you get Kawhi Leonard on the move attacking with, yep, a little bit ahead of steam. I'm not sure that would work as well with Giannis, just because of the horizontal space that he covers. What I'm interested, though, is in watching some Bucks tape and talking to a few Bucks people, I think the weakest part of Giannis's defensive game right now, and obviously this is like the weakest part of maybe the best defensive player in the world's defensive game. So
yeah,
it's like when people talk about Kawhi's playmaking not being that good, it's like, well, it's not that good, yeah, compared to all the other amazing things Kawhi is doing.
Yeah.
But Giannis's defense against pick and roll ball handlers is a little suspect. Like, it's tough for him because he's so big, I think.
I don't think he goes around screens very well.
Yeah. It's tough to navigate because he's so long. And like, Lopez would just drop back and dare Siakam into mid-rangers, and maybe he could get some of those floater range shots. But do you think having Siakam initiate pick and roll against Giannis might be a way to get him going a little bit, or is he just going to run into other problems? I can't decide whether I think they should try it or not.
Yeah, I don't ultimately think that's a great look, because I don't think he's a great passer out of the situation. Like, if he comes around that screen and he goes, you know, one or two steps into the paint, he's shooting that thing, and it's probably going to be contested. I honestly think that, like, there were opportunities, especially in the second quarter there, when they play Siakam basically at three, where he's running the offense off top, and I'm thinking, what are you doing? You have Mirotić on him, you have Ersan Ilyasova on him, like, go into the post.
He cooked those two guys whenever he's on them, yeah.
That's what I'm saying, like, you there are opportunities for him to get into the post in those situations. Like, I don't think there's anything you can realistically do to, like, expose Giannis defensively,
yeah.
So I don't think you can really shift him around and stuff. But even against Giannis, like, he tried that one post-up and he got blocked. I kind of want to see him try, like, two or three more post-ups. Just see what you can get out of that. I mean, I don't think Giannis is trying to foul. And so, you know, like, there is an opportunity for him where he's not playing against an overly aggressive defender, so he can maybe get a shot off. Like, I just think that you're going to ultimately need more than Pascal, or more than what Pascal gave you in game one. And the corner three, I mean, I don't even know what to say about that. It just feels like that shot was so automatic for him, but whether it's injuries... Yeah, he's got to take those. But, I mean, the fact that he was, like, 0 of 7 from the corners was just shocking.
Yeah, he's got to take them, though. Their offense just doesn't work without guys taking those. And
he got some open ones. He got some wide open ones.
Yeah, and I mean, what's the alternative? He uses that space to get ahead of steam to drive at Giannis?
Yeah.
That's not a particularly useful way to use that space, right?
Yeah.
So I think he still has to take those. I mean, part of the solution might be, and it's tough the way the Raptors have played throughout the playoffs to say this, he might just need to use fewer possessions.
Okay, where do the rest of the possessions go?
I guess that's the thing is, you know, are you running more for Danny? Are you putting more Kyle pick and roll in?
And well, after game one,
and then you're shifting Pascal's possessions to Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol, maybe. So that's maybe not a great answer. I look at 20 field goal attempts on a night that he didn't have it, and the defense was frustrating him. And maybe that's a tad high.
Well, I think one thing that worked really well against the Bucks in regular season was the, like, just running high pick and roll and then kicking it back out to the pop jumper. Yes. And I think
high pick and roll, like not free throw line pick and roll, up, like high enough that Kyle or Kawhi could step into a three. Over top.
And I think that's one thing that they didn't do really well with Kawhi too. Was just like they set the screen a little bit too low, and like as soon as he came off, Brooke was right there.
Yeah.
Right. If he comes out a little bit higher, then yes, there will
this
be
more
space.
This is the thing. If Brooke has to come up above the free throw line, then him coming up a little higher to cut off the mid-range from Kawhi is a lot tougher than if he can still, you know, if he's coming up higher, quote unquote, but a foot's still in the paint.
Yeah.
That's I think that makes a big difference. So.
Yeah. I think there's things they can do there, but I also think that, like, you know, if Pascal takes fewer shots, then...
Yeah, I guess it's not a great solution because they don't have a lot of players who you trust to shoot shots right now.
Yeah, but I mean, like, at some point, like, Mark and Serge, they got to score a little bit better than this. And in the regular season, Serge averaged 22 points a game. He took, like, 18 shots a game, which is...
He took 74 shots, I think, or 72 shots over the, like, four games against Milwaukee?
Yeah, he averaged a ton, right? And so
Mark and Serge also both set career highs in three-point attempts against the Bucks this year.
Yeah. And Mark took 12. And even today, like, you know, before, at shoot around, he was talking about how, like, oh, I got to take, like, 5, 6, 7, 8 M's in my bank account. No, like, shoot threes, right? And it's like, wow, I can't believe he said that. Let's see him do it. He actually did it. He took 7, right? And he only hit 2 of 7, you know, whatever. It's a make or miss league. But, like,
Doug.
But, I mean, man, it's just you kind of need more scoring from that center spot. And realistically, the one area where if the Raptors can get the easiest offense, like in terms of just with the least resistance in a half court, it should be the high pick and roll, and then you pass it out to the big man who shoots. And the opportunity is there almost all the time based on how the Bucks defend, and the Raptors just didn't do a good job of capitalizing on that, you know?
Yeah, it's tough, too, when, I mean, this isn't related to the point, but Gasol was 0-for inside the three-point line.
Yeah, and I thought the Raptors had made a concerted effort to actually get him inside, have him short roll, and then so he can take that little mid-range shot. So it's
or
not
that
only
push shot.
Yeah, it's a mid-range shot, the push shot, whatever. Like I think they try to intentionally mix it up so that he's not only exclusively taking threes, because that is hard for a guy to do. At the same time, though, like, he was just off.
Yeah, there was just one. Really there was off. One thing that the Raptors, and they did this a little against Philly, and I was super interested in it, and it's one of the things that maybe they needed more time with together. But when Gasol did get it at the elbows, there have been a couple times recently where they've run a corner action with Kawhi and Kyle around that.
Okay.
They did it once, too, against Philly with Serge at the elbow. And I was like, if Serge can make this pass, you know, Mark should be able to make that pass, too. So I don't know if you remember, like, the corner offense the Cavs used to run with kind of LeBron at the elbow, and they would run guys off of that. Or even the Bucks in 2017 when they had Greg Monroe.
Yeah,
they would run it. And Dellavedova setting these screens. I mean, the Raptors might be able to get something out of that, where you're just forcing the Bucks into tough decisions, and then Gasol hits a quick pass. I mean, you can't hand it to Gasol at the elbows, like at Memphis levels of hand the ball to Gasol at the elbows.
Yeah,
but maybe there's a way to, you know, get a little going. I think Kawhi had a good cut around one of those last night. It didn't result in a bucket, but you know, I think there's opportunity to try to get Kawhi maybe some easier looks that way, or leverage Mark in a way that pulls Brook Lopez away from the rim but doesn't require him to shoot a ton.
That's true,
because he doesn't want to shoot a ton,
and I think
no matter what he says.
Yeah, and I think he does, I think he still does command enough respect from the defense where if he does catch the ball at the elbow, as you mentioned, like, Brook would be up on him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's no way Brooke's just going to still sit at the rim.
You're not going to let Marc Gasol survey the floor with nobody in front of him.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Is the thing.
You can't let him make any pass he wants.
I don't even know that they'd be worried about the elbow jumper. You just don't want him being able to see cutters and pick out shooters and stuff like that. So,
yeah, that's one solution. I'm not
saying it's a solution for like 30 possessions a game.
No, but it's one option.
Yeah,
right?
Go through that a little more, especially when things get gummed up, you know. It sounds ridiculous, but they actually did this against Orlando for like multiple possessions of throw the ball to Gasol at the elbow and everyone just run around.
Yeah.
Someone will get open. There was one play where like it looked like they had no idea what they were doing. They were just like running circles around Gasol, and then eventually someone got open.
That was basically the Grizzlies offense for the longest time.
For years.
Also,
the Grizzlies had the worst offense in the league with Gasol, maybe I shouldn't be trying to pull from those days.
Come on, the rest of that talent was not good, but yeah, Gasol also himself was not as efficient in that look. I think One other thing is, I think just the minutes split. Like, it doesn't really make sense to me that Gasol played 40 minutes, just because on paper, I think honestly, Serge is, at least on paper, strictly speaking, on paper, like he's should be the better player in this series. And I think, look, Serge even said it today in practice. He's like, I put on myself, like, I got to play with more energy, and like, I just didn't really do that. And I think it sounds frustrating, but like, yeah, I mean, he just didn't really impose himself on the game. I think his energy...
They got rolled in the minutes that Ibaka was out there without Gasol. I know, because a lot of that people were calling for Ibaka should have closed, or Ibaka should have got more minutes. And like, the minute split should have been more even, but Ibaka was... They were getting killed when Ibaka was out there. Brook Lopez was just raining.
Raining threes, and also getting to putbacks and stuff like that, right? But I think, you know, it's just... Offensively, like, if you're talking about a guy who will absolutely shoot... Serge will shoot that, and I think you can get him easier offense in this game. And I also think that in game one, at least in the very limited possessions where he went up against Giannis, I thought he was actually okay.
He was okay.
He was okay.
You can live with it is the thing. If it's going to...
Now, well, the one thing he has is he can muscle Giannis a little bit. Yes. Giannis can't just like bully him at the rim.
Now, my issue with those matchups last night wasn't even that. It was more that over the Gasol-Ibaka minutes, they allowed Milwaukee to have a 40% offensive rebound rate. And if you're putting both of those guys on the floor and you're sacrificing that spacing and you're risking the Giannis-Ibaka matchup, you've got to win the glass. Like against Philly, sometimes there were a couple times they had 100% defensive rebound rate. And it's not like Philly is a worse offensive rebounding team than Milwaukee. I think they were a better offensive rebounding team than them.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, I also think, like...
Small sample or whatever, but still.
They're a little bit caught off guard, too, I think, with how much the Bucks were attacking the glass. Because I think you expect, like...
that's not part of their strategy, normally.
No.
They're pretty conservative.
Like, they have, like, a poacher.
Shocked that Bud is conservative.
Yeah, seriously. No, but, like, they have a poacher in, like, you know, Mirotić, or, like, Ilyasova will try to, like, get a hand up and sort of try to tip it in without even grabbing the board. Or occasionally you might get one, like, Bledsoe will fly in. But, like, Lopez, for example, he's not a guy that usually goes for a lot of offensive rebounds. I think he averaged, like, 0.4 in the regular season. Yeah. He had four last night.
They're actually
and they were all putbacks.
They're fairly similar to how the Raptors approach offensive rebounds normally, where it's like, okay, whoever's down there, go for it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you better sprint in and sprint out.
Yeah.
So.
And I think yesterday, just with them missing so many shots early, they were just like, we got to get offense, so we're going to change our strategy a little bit. And I think that hurt the Raptors a little bit. But I just think that, look, ultimately there is an opportunity there where you got to look at the minutes and you got to look at the rotation a little bit, and you got to say, like, Serge has to probably play 25 minutes in this series.
Gasol
and
just can't play Mark 40, right? Like,
Gasol should ideally play 30.
Yeah.
Like, just to keep his energy up, because it's not the same as, like, you know, like against a Philly or against Orlando. Like, he will, like, guard someone in the post, and then they'll kick it out, and then they might work pick and roll. He can still stay in the paint. He'll plug the paint. Then he'll, like, box out, get the rebound. Like, most of his time is spent within the paint. Yeah. Like, in this game, there's a number of times, like, I thought Gasol did a pretty good job running around, going to contest, and then also helping, but that wears on you, and he's 34.
And it goes back to our early conversation about the long stints for the starters, too, where I don't think it would be a bad thing to take some of the lessons from the Joel Embiid tethering and just be like, look, Gasol and Ibaka, and this is something the Raptors talked about before the year with Ibaka and Valanciunas. They were like, look, we're going to run shorter shifts with those guys to keep them fresher. They're going to play 5 or 6 minute stints, and I don't know if you need to go that aggressive necessarily, but like, you can bounce those guys in and out, especially in a matchup like this where you're not worried necessarily about the center.
Well, because the Bucks are running the same like sets basically no matter who's on the floor.
Yeah, so you can bounce those guys in, and we've talked about this before, that if Ibaka comes in a little earlier, first of all, Ibaka with the starters has a large sample of being successful.
Yeah. Really just Ibaka with Lowry.
Yeah, it gets Ibaka playing with Lowry, which we know works better than Ibaka playing with anyone else. And then also, then when Gasol comes back in, maybe at the top of the second or whenever, then those bench units that, look, you have to play bench guys. You can't go 7 games in 13 days playing 6 guys. But those minutes suddenly for Fred and Norm are coming with Gasol on the floor instead of Ibaka. And you have an extra playmaker. You've seen Van Vliet and Powell both play a little bit better, at least getting their own shots around Gasol. I think, you know, maybe some shorter stints and just like, I mean, it seems simplistic. It's not going to solve everything, but just getting those guys in and out a little quicker might keep them fresher. And then you might accidentally, by doing that, solve some of the bench stuff by not playing three of them at once because of how you're rotating the centers.
Yeah, that's true. I just think you're real limited when you have the three bench guys on at once. But, I mean,
you're real limited when you have the three bench guys and you're on at once. You're real limited with only having three bench guys, period, right now.
Yeah.
I think at this point it's pretty clear he's not going deeper than that.
No.
Rest in peace, Jeremy Lin, Malcolm Miller.
Oh, man.
We're not getting a Jody Meeks revenge series.
He was on the Bucks?
Yeah.
When?
When he got suspended.
Oh, I thought he was on the Wizards.
Maybe he was. He was on the Bucks before that then. I'm pretty sure Jordy Meeks played for the Bucks.
I wouldn't be surprised, actually.
Yeah. Jordy Meeks played for a lot of teams.
Yeah, he's been around.
Make you second guess it. I thought he was on the Bucks team that the Raptors played in the playoffs that year.
No.
No?
I don't think so.
Damn. Well, I don't know what I'm talking about.
All right. Well.
Anyway.
I mean, he was definitely on the Wizards, and then yeah, he got
that
asked
I
out.
Remember.
In any case, while you look that up, I do think like part of it with the bench is just like. Again, like, you know, there's some things where you can look at game one, you can say this is what they did well, this is what they can crack, this is what whatever, and then there's just things out of their control. And I feel like with something like the bench, like, I mean, how many times, like, on all our podcasts, you know,
man, Jordy Meeks played for some teams.
Yeah, okay, or read them off.
He did play for the Bucks.
He did, okay.
Yeah, for like 41 games.
What?
Yeah, back in the day.
So it wasn't 2017.
It was certainly not 2017.
Okay.
He played for Milwaukee, Philadelphia, the Lakers, Detroit, Orlando, Washington, Toronto.
Okay.
That's seven teams already.
Wow.
In 11 years. I guess that's not that crazy. But
no, that's still a lot. I remember him with the Lakers. I liked him with the Lakers.
Sure.
Yeah. The Lakers fans didn't like him, but...
Anyway, I cut you off there.
I was going to say, like, with the bench, like some of these guys, like... You're just kind of stuck relying on them, and we've seen all season that they're unreliable, but like they got to play a little bit better. And from the first half, I thought I was actually like pretty encouraged. I even tweeted it out. I was like, wow, if the Raptors can actually extend their bench a little bit, that would be great. But the second half happened,
and
they were trash.
They played the non-Kawhi minutes neutral in the first half.
Which is huge. Like, Norm hitting two threes was big. And Norm actually, you know...
Fred having some good kickouts.
Fred, I thought, you know, again, looking over the tape, like, the box score numbers never looked good for Fred. But, like, the decisions that he was making offensively was good. I mean, he was able to get into the paint, like you mentioned, like, the 1 foot in the paint, whatever. He was getting 2 feet in the paint, kicking it out, open threes, and people would either knock them down or wouldn't. But that's good offense. That's good point guard play. And all that just, like... dried up in the second half, you know what I mean? And again, when you can't rely on the bench guys, then you're overextending the starting guys, and then they get tired, and then Milwaukee crushes you, and then you waste an opportunity
there's,
like this with
there's
Kyle
not
Hunter.
A great answer. It's tough to play a series with 6.5 guys that you trust, and obviously OG Anunoby's absence is felt. And then I think this is at least a little bit of a lesson of how to use that last third of the roster in future years. Like the Raptors using the end of the roster for potential future guys and inexpensive guys makes sense with where they are. Not testing those guys in NBA games at all, though, is a little tough. Like, Malcolm Miller and Chris Boucher played a combined, like, seven meaningful minutes. Even Patrick McCaw didn't get, like, a great sample after he came over of meaningful minutes.
Right.
And look, you can't just, like, ditch the second unit for games at a time to get those guys looks, but you entered the playoffs with a third of your roster being guys that you were just like, nope, we're never going to use them.
Yeah.
And part of that was Jeremy Lin. They didn't expect him to do this bad.
I was going to say, like, if we go back and look at this, right, in terms of how the bench was constructed, like, how did the bench get
this
bad?
They thought they'd have 10 guys. They thought Jeremy Lin would be in the DeLon Wright spot or able to fill that spot. And they thought they'd have OG Anunoby.
Right. And that hurts. OG really hurts in this series.
Yeah.
But even if you had OG, I don't know how much it necessarily changes. I think it does give the Raptors a little more flexibility because he's one of those guys that sort of enables you to play up a position or down a position. And
or
you can play,
more of those super big lineups with, you know, you could have gone, when we've seen Leonard, Siakam, Ibaka, Gasol, you can go Leonard, Anunoby, Siakam, and then one center, and you're still functionally huge.
Yeah, that's true.
But you're a little more athletic, you're a little speedier.
Yeah.
But they don't have him, so I guess... it's not really worth discussing.
I mean, it's just like a number of steps happen, right? Like, you make the Gasol trade, you cut one guy out of the rotation in DeLon, right? Because Gasol effectively replaced JV's minutes, but how do you replace DeLon? You bring in Jeremy, who at the time was the best free agent buyout guard.
Like, he was the best case scenario on the buyout market.
Yeah, seriously. Like, as good as possible, and he was having a pretty good year with the Hawks. Comes in, completely falls off a cliff, doesn't really fit with the team system. You know, Nick Nurse even said, like, maybe I'm just not calling enough plays for him or something like that. He's not used to playing a structured offense, or it's too structured. I don't know. It was a lot of excuses, and eventually they were just like, no, this is not going to work out. And then you get OG. Okay, it's unfortunate that he's spent all year hurt, but then all of a sudden at the end, he somehow even gets more hurt by having a really bad surgery that takes 3+ hours, and he's... I mean, he's walking around and he's with the team again, which is nice to see. But like, I don't think realistically he would have. I don't think he's in a position physically to come back in this series. And then you look at the rest of the roster. Like, you know, It's just limited. And it's weird because the Raptors have always been able to rely on depth. Now, whether that depth actually translated to playoffs is a little bit different, but I'm just stuck kind of envious, you know what I mean? Because the three bench guys that they've consistently relied on, like Serge, like he's really inconsistent and really he's not used to playing with the bench, and it seems like it affects his production. And Fred, I mean, he likes to get his own offense going, but right now I don't think his confidence is as high as it normally would be. He's turning down a couple of shots here and there, and you know he's doing his best, but I think he looks physically limited. And then Norm just doesn't really fit with either of those two guys, and it's just, I don't know, it's just the bench leaves you wanting, you know. And you look on the other side, Milwaukee, they bring in Ersan, they bring in George Hill, they bring in Connaughton, they bring in Brogdon now, who I think Brogdon might eventually go to the starting lineup, but right now he's with the bench still. Like, they got a lot of pieces. They bring them in, they plug and play. It doesn't change their system. You don't have to rely, you don't have to, wonder if they can functionally hold up. Like, I'm just very envious. I know this is a long spiel, but yeah, the Raptors bench has been a sore spot all season, and I think it's ultimately going to be their undoing. And it's unfortunate because the Raptors starters are really freaking good. It's just, if the bench could just do anything positive.
I mean, also, we don't need to phrase it as like it's going to be their undoing. They made the conference finals. They're one of the four last teams. It's like,
they made the finals, conference finals, in spite of the bench, though.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
But it's, you're going to look at this series and it's not even going to be just, you know, how little did the bench give them. If the bench doesn't turn it around, it's also the extra toll on the guys and things like that. And it's interesting, like, you look around the league and like Rodney Hood comes back from the dead with a new opportunity and some empowerment, and like Alphonso McKinney is playing minutes in like an 11-man Warriors rotation when KD goes down.
Okay, Steve Kerr has a problem though.
Yeah, he does.
Steve Kerr has
some Dwayne Casey tendencies when it comes to just throwing everyone out there. Lorenzo Brown for a fourth quarter against the Cavs?
I would kill for Lorenzo right now. Lorenzo, where are you
at? He's in China, man.
I'm sorry, Lorenzo. We were sorry for slandering Lorenzo Brown. Seriously, come back, bring your headband back. Come on, man.
But you have these guys step up. Me and Pat Connaughton is like, he was not in the rotation until like February.
Yeah.
And now he's like an indispensable 25-minute-a-game guy.
Yeah,
it's just the Raptors never had that click this year for any.
Do you think
of their
Bud
reserves.
Confused them with DiVincenzo? Because DiVincenzo had his spot early in the rotation. He's like, "Oh, actually, you're you're Connaughton, okay."
Yeah.
And the Bucks were, I think they made smart moves. Like they added to their depth, and it helps that they had guys that they can, you know, cast off, like Thon, and they had some extra picks and stuff like that, so they can grab some depth. Like George Hill, for example, they basically got for free. They used a first round pick, but you know, that also was salary dumping Delhi. That helped their depth. And then, you know, you get Mirotić basically for picks. Like, it helps. Whereas the Raptors, you know, they decide to kind of shorten the rotation a little bit, and it's weird. You never want to lose with the bench. You want to lose with your best five, but the best five can only play so long, you know?
Yeah, at 31 minutes apparently. And they were still positive, the starters, last night. In those 31 minutes, I think they were plus six. So as long as that five comes out there, just play them 48 minutes. They'll die, but
yeah, we need Nick Thibodeau to come back. And Nick's done that too. Like, he really has. Like game four against Philly,
the Siakam limited one where basically they ran six guys,
and then game seven, like, you know, he's done it. But you can only do that in emergency situations. Blake, how do you see game two going?
I think it's gonna be pretty similar, honestly.
Yeah,
I think both teams were probably encouraged enough by their performances in that one that they're not going to overhaul too much. Obviously, you know, you look at a game tape and it's a lot of the theoretical stuff you talked about becomes practical, and you can find ways to improve. But I think from a scheme and matchup wise, I don't think either side makes a change. The one thing I'll be really interested to see is more of a game three thing. If the Raptors, and maybe this requires the Raptors to win game two, but if the Raptors starters outplay the Bucks starters again, Brogdon and Mirotić's place with the starters was really good in a small window, and that was a very good high usage lineup all year.
That was their starting lineup all year.
Yeah, and it was pretty good. Yeah. And I think, you know, I wonder if Bud waits for a loss to make that switch back, or if it's just another, you know, Mirotić. You got the box score there. Mirotić was -15 or something like that, or Brogdon was +15. They had the very
Mirotić was -5, Brogdon +18.
Okay,
big swing.
It was, yeah,
big swing.
So big swing, and that, I think that group is +12 in 4 minutes, and they match up better with the Raptors that way.
Yeah, they do. So.
I could see that, but that's probably more of a game three thing. That's probably the biggest adjustment I think that's hanging over this. Like, I saw people being like, start Norm for Danny or like start Surge for Danny.
Oh, I was gonna say
that
I was gonna throw
stuff's not happening.
I was gonna throw those ideas at you, but I could potentially see the Gasol Ibaka flip, not like in outright in the starting lineup, but I think in terms of just minutes wise throughout the game, they can.
Yeah, they've got to come closer to even in minutes, yeah. Not all the way, but like. Yeah, what did they play last night? What did Surge play?
17. Now, granted, Surge could have played a lot better.
Yes.
That's on Surge.
40 and 17 should maybe be more like 33-25, ideally, or something like that.
I agree.
And that's assuming they're still going to play some of the two big lineups because they just don't have the depth to not do that. Unless Pascal plays 48.
Yeah. Let me hit just some rapid fire.
Uh-oh.
Kyle Lowry, 30 points. Does it ever happen again in a playoff game? Not in this playoff series, but ever.
No.
Okay, all right.
I feel awful saying that, but just like he's had five over the last, 260 games, and he'll be a year older. I don't know. I hope so, though. I hope he does in game two. It makes me look like an idiot.
Does Norman Powell make a surprise start against the Bucks, and that changes the whole series?
No.
I miss Jason Kidd coaching the Bucks. That was a great time. Or Frank Vogel. Man, Frank Vogel must have been really desperate for a job.
When Frank Vogel
that's the shittiest job.
I can't wait till a playoff game when Frank Vogel has LeBron, Kyrie, and Anthony Davis all on the bench at the same time.
Yeah.
And I've made that joke already. But
yeah, and he's playing Lance Stevenson and Rondo.
And probably George Hill.
Yeah.
He'll find his way there.
Kawhi, 48 minutes at some point in the series.
No.
45?
Yes.
Okay.
I just don't think they'll ever play him a whole first half.
Yeah.
Because the game, you won't know the game's dire enough yet.
Yeah. And that's about it, actually.
These are slow rapid
fire. I was going to say, I was trying to think of more rapid fire questions. I don't really have that many in this series.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I think we kind of tactically saw what it was, you know, in game one. And I think I'm kind of comfortable. At the same time, I'm also kind of just like, the Bucks are a better team, you know? Yeah. Like, I predicted Bucks in six. After losing game one, I don't think I'm going to change that too much, although I think it's a little bit more likely that Bucks in five happens. But. Like, you know.
Yeah. I feel a little shaky in my Bucks in seven. I think it finishing quicker is on the table. When I made that pick, I thought that game one was probably going to be their best opportunity to steal one in Milwaukee, just because Milwaukee had such a long layoff.
Yeah.
I'm always worried about teams with that kind of layoff.
It worked out. I mean, in the first quarter, Raptors jumped all over them.
Yeah. So that was kind of what was in my head.
Yeah.
But they're going to have to win one on the road to extend this to seven, I think, because I don't know that you're going to sweep at home.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial. Plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
I just don't know if you can beat the Bucks that many times in a row.
No.
Two is not that many, but...
It feels like a lot against the Bucks. The Bucks are really good.
Taking all your home
contender.
Games would mean winning 3 out of 4 against the Bucks, is, I guess, what I'm trying to say. That feels tough. So, game two is a big one.
I say they take game two, though.
Hope so.
Yeah, it'll be the reverse of this. Raptors win 108.
We need Tony Brothers and Mark Davis, the guys that the Raptors have the best records with.
People really hate them, but you're right.
14-1 with Tony Brothers this year, and I forget the updated stat, but when I looked entering the playoffs, the Raptors were 6-0 in Mark Davis games when Kawhi played, and Kawhi's free throw numbers were really high.
Well, there you go. All right, so we've now
save us NBA.
We've now reached the point where we need Tony Brothers. So, yeah, Blake, thanks so much for coming on. What are you going to plug, man? You write every day. Just look for Blake's Twitter account. You know, buy an Athletic subscription if you haven't already, and read and listen to all Blake's content. You still got that?
Yeah. All playoffs, I got 40% off, so I can throw people.
All playoffs? You mean all season? If you look hard enough, you will get a discount code.
If someone DMs me, I'm going to find them a discount code. It's not a... It's part of how the model is based right now. It's like, you gotta get people in.
Yeah, exactly. So... Blake, thanks for coming on, and to everyone else, the podcast will be back after Game 2, when, as I predicted, the Raptors will win, so look for that. It'll be a lot more happy than Game 1 or this podcast, but thanks everyone for listening, and go Raptors.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.